Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 15. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Hello.
And we have a Tobe Hooper double feature coming up for you. We're going to pit two Tobe Hooper films from the 1980s against each other. We're going to get into that shortly. But Jeff and I have we watched some other stuff over the last month, and let's take a jump into that, Jeff. We're not gonna spend too long here, but tell me about Nobody.
Yeah. So I haven't seen a ton of new things, but one of them was Nobody, and that's the action movie that stars Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, and. I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of it, and I ended up having an absolute blast with it.
Like when you hear Bob Odenkirk, you do not think action movie. So
no, it was a different turn for him. But I think he really works in the role, and I love action movies that will have like an action star like this. So, I think like. Die Hard kind of like kicked it off in the 80s. Maybe there's other ones I'm not thinking of, but like kind of the everyman, like, like you look in the 80s, like the action stars, like look at like Stallone and Schwarzenegger, they just got bigger and bigger and the guns got bigger and bigger. And then you had Bruce Willis come in who like he was a guy from like a sitcom.
Moonlighting at that
point. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I think that, like, I just love that normal guy type thing that can kick ass. Like, so, the setup of this is, like, it's all, like, kind of in the trailer. Like, these guys break into his house and rob his house, and he doesn't do anything, and he feels emasculated. And it's interesting because, like, that has nothing to do with the main plot of the movie. He just starts to like get pissed off that he didn't do anything, and he goes on like he's like riding a bus, and he just randomly beats the living shit out of all these people on this bus, and one that bus scene is like amazing, really really fun, but unfortunately one of the guys he beats up is like a mob guy's son. Or something like that, and so now he's got all these bad guys coming for him. But, and this is in the trailer too, so it's not really spoilery, but like, he is well equipped to deal with these people in actuality, because he has, a past. He's not always been a normal, boring everyman.
Got it.
And that's, it's a very simple premise. It's just he beat up the wrong people, and now they're coming for him. And just tons of like awesome kind of like brutal action, like just him kind of like MacGyvering shit, like making bombs out of nails that are lying around and stuff like that, and just using any sort of tool or anything that's around him to like really fucking hurt people. He gets hurt himself too, like even though you come to realize, oh, this guy like knows what he's doing, he's still not like. He's not like Mr. Muscles or whatever. Like he's a normal skinny guy, and he gets his ass kicked a bunch in this too. His dad is played by Christopher Lloyd, and he's really fun in it. And the movie is just, in my opinion, really really fun action movie. Like it exceeded my expectations. It's kind of like a shoe-in for me for top 10 of the year. Like I had a lot of fun with it. So high recommendation for Nobody. Not really much else to say about it. It does have some like fun world building by the end where you're like, I wouldn't mind seeing more of these guys, like, Bob Odenkirk and his dad kicking some ass. And who knows if we'll get more, but
now you did make a big statement in our private chat after you saw this. You said you think it's better than John Wick. No, like that's
yeah.
I mean, I'm not like the biggest John Wick fan, but that's kind of a big statement to make.
Yeah,
it's kind of like John Wick. So
that's kind of the big non-comic book action movie series, you know, right now. And I think the reason I made the comparison is I think one of the guys that worked on John Wick did this, and I just prefer like there's no like, I mean, there's sort of some hitman nonsense or whatever, but it's just more. You don't have to buy into this whole world of assassins type thing. It's just like he's ex government employee type thing. You know, it's a little
And he
more.
pissed off the wrong people.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think Odenkirk as a normal everyman is more interesting than Keanu Reeves, who can't really play normal, in my opinion. Like he's just,
He plays
I
Keanu
don't know.
Reeves.
Yeah, it's like this ultra cool, you know, hitman dude. Like, no, this is just like some normal guy who like knows how to do things. Like I just like that conceit better. And also, you know, John Wick the action in it is really great. Like I'm into that series now, but you know, the gun fu stuff, it's an interesting spin and it's kind of a new idea in action that they do in John Wick, but I just prefer the blunt, like brutality of the action in this.
Like you get more hands-on.
Yeah, like grab a fucking shovel and you know what I mean? It's just
Yep.
like grab whatever you have lying around. And you know, there's a little bit of that in John Wick, but you know, John Wick just feels so choreographed and so like insane. And this is just more like
When he's so
beating the
perfect
shit
too,
out of
right?
people.
Like
Yeah.
John Wick is so like I mean there are the big battles at the towards the end of each where he kind of gets put through the ringer a little bit, but in general, like he is so perfect at his job and fighting people that it's a bit absurd.
Yeah. So I don't know. I for me personally, I prefer Nobody.
Nice.
And like you haven't seen Nobody yet, but you've seen the John Wick movies, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you can let us know when you see it. I don't know. It just for me, it works better, and it's very high recommend. The only bad thing I could say about it really is the very final note, like the very final scene, is silly and corny and lame in my opinion. But like the whole rest of the movie is so fun, it doesn't even matter. It's just like you're just kind of like me and my girlfriend were both like, that was a dumb joke to end on. Like you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it too. You'll be like, eh, could have just ended it a scene earlier.
All right.
So
Well, that's one that's been on my radar, so.
it's finally available for rent. Like it was one of those ones hanging around for the $20 rental. Now it's standard
Yeah, I think I
six
saw it
bucks
for
or
like
whatever.
$6 or something like that, so yeah.
Yeah.
I might check that out. We both saw I guess oh, maybe not a big release, but prior to it coming out, it was pretty hyped up. The new Lin-Manuel Miranda musical, In the Heights,
Yeah.
debuted on HBO Max and in theaters. Kind of bombed in theaters.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what the expectation was, but it did not seem to meet that. But
Hey,
yeah.
but in its defense, we're still coming out of COVID.
Yeah.
Two, you can watch it for free at home. I know that's how I watched it, so there was no way for me to get, I mean, I guess I could have gone to the theater, but typically
Yeah.
you give me the option,
Yeah,
you know?
there are movies that I will go see in a theater. Not to say that this wouldn't be a good, in-person theater experience, because I do think if people are like really into it, like
Yeah.
it could be a very special type of experience. But
Yeah.
I watched it at home. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. It's probably my favorite new film of the year so far. But it's I don't really think it's been a particularly strong year either so far. So
It's getting started.
yeah,
Like the
it's
second
starting
half
to
is
move on.
stacked.
Yes. It's like looking at the release calendar. Like there's a lot that I am excited for in the coming 6 months. Anyway, it's a musical. It takes place in Washington Heights, New York. It's like a small neighborhood. It's like Queens, Brooklyn area, I guess. Highly Hispanic population. Specifically, I believe Dominican is what I've been hearing, and that's what one of the characters there. You know, the main character is like looking to the future. He wants to get out of the Heights and go back to the Dominican Republic and open up his father's bar or something like that. And it's just this like 3-4 day trip, like with these people, and a blackout that happens. And
It's another super hot New York movie, like super hot couple days in New York movie.
I liked it. As I said, I liked it a lot. But the songs are they're not ringing in my head. Like I'm not. It's not like Hamilton where it was like there are definitely songs in Hamilton where I'm like, yeah, like these are bangers. These are ones I want to listen to over and over again. Nothing in the Heights really stood out to me like that. It's just very well done, very well choreographed with the dance numbers, and I thought that the story's nice, but it's not. There's no real antagonist. It's just beat
It's
the
just a,
heat.
yeah, and it's just this guy, like, you already kind of laid out what the main story is this guy who dreams of going to where he came from or whatever. Yeah, I didn't love it as much as you, which surprised me. It's funny because, like, I remember one of my things with La La Land is I was like, it needs more songs. Like, there's not enough songs. This movie is 2.5 hours long and it never stops with the songs.
Has
Like,
tons
it's
of
just,
songs.
yeah. And they do go, like, so all out with the musical numbers, like, hundreds of extras, really cool shit. Like, I just feel bad that I don't like it as much as I thought I would, and like it gave me like kind of what I asked for out of La La Land in a way, and
Yeah,
I'm just,
I think
it didn't,
it does deliver on that the big spectacle that you expect kind of from a movie. And like there's two big scenes in particular. There's like the opening number that like where they're dancing in the streets, and then there's one that takes place at a pool, which is really cool. Like very well choreographed, like striking visually, but unfortunately the music just didn't resonate quite as much with me, but I
I
did
think
love the film.
I think that's why for me I just was kind of cool on it because Hamilton is 3 hours of songs. Like Hamilton's basically all songs too, and but like those songs left a really big impression on me. I think part of it here is I'm used to Lin-Manuel Miranda's like lyrical tricks and stuff, like the way he'll write his raps and stuff like that. Like it's not new to me anymore, but also it's just like it loses some sort of like interesting factor that the Hamilton had being about his history. It's like you're seeing these like guys from hundreds of years ago rapping and stuff. Like here, it's just like it feels more
Yeah, like learning history
natural.
through like pop music and rap rock music is like it's a cool way of like looking at it, right? Like it's just like this hip hop history extravaganza where this is like it's a bit of this, it's a bit of this culture, it's a bit of this area of New York, and that's nice. It's very sweet. It's a very like heartwarming film, but I don't know if it's gonna at least for me, it's not gonna have that like cultural impact.
It's hard for me to be mean about this movie. Like I think I gave it like 3 stars or whatever, but like it's just a nice movie. It's like, and there's also not a lot of people working like doing musicals these days, so good for him. And you know what? I'll say another nice thing about it. For me, it's always nice when Jimmy Smith shows up. He's always great. He's great again here. And
That I really like the cast here. Like, I mean, like, yeah, the main character's kind of a nobody actor, but he great performance. His buddy, I just had his name up here. Corey Hawkins, excellent as well. And then like all the girls in it, all the women are phenomenal. Even like Stephanie Beatrice, who is for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she plays like she's excellent. And like I like at first I was like, that's not, and I like had to like look it up. It's like, oh, holy shit, that is her.
I think I did look it up too, because I'm like, is that her? Because I don't watch that show a lot. Like, I've seen it, but you know, I was like, is that that girl from like? First I was like, where's she from? And I'm like, it's the girl from like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right? And yeah, sure enough, it was.
Yes, like really enjoyed the cast, but yeah, it's just a nice heartwarming summer movie. So
yeah,
and I think it. Well, you might not have much more time to watch it on HBO, but it's there currently.
Yeah.
And then we saw another one that was a bit hyped up. I don't have the info in front of me, but it was The Amusement Park.
Yeah.
By George Romero. And I did not know what this movie was going in. You did.
Blind, huh?
Yeah, I went in blind, just like, oh, like there's like a
boy.
There's a new George Romero movie that weirdly was never released. That's strange, but cool. That, like, somebody went, found this print, restored it. The reason it was never released is because it's really just a weird PSA for ageism.
Yeah, the Lutheran Church, or I think it specifically called it Lutheran Society.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioned him to make this film, and then they were horrified by what he turned in, and they shelved it. And fun fact, you know, Romero, before he died, he was not proud of this. He thought it was like a major mistake in his career. He didn't think much of it.
I don't think I thought much of it either. I mean, it's this neat historical piece that, like, and I think it's really cool that this forgetting the company or society or foundation that, like, kind of
I think it's the Romero it. The Romero Society, you know, his wife and stuff, and
yeah, like, it's really neat that, like, for fans of Romero, like, hey, like, yeah, look at this thing that he did, like, that's a neat historical thing. But
yeah,
it's on Shudder. I went in with, you know, the expectation of, like, hey, there's this cool new horror film from George Romero, and that was not what it was. It was really weird.
See, I knew everything about it. I had read a bunch of reviews before, so like I knew what I was getting into, and then even still, I felt like, you know, I knew it was going to be a PSA. It's not like a typical narrative film. It's under an hour. I knew all these things. But even still, I thought some of the reviews that I read going in, like, way, way oversold what this thing is. I fall in line with you in that I'm a Romero fan, and even though I knew what it was, I was excited to see it because I'm a Romero fan. I'm like, oh, we could see something that he did that's lost now. But I you know, it's a PSA. I don't think that it's honestly super successful in what it's trying to say, to be honest. Like, I watched along on Twitter, all these people watching the premiere, and they're like, wow, I never thought about, like, how we treated old people. Like, this really opened my eyes. I was like, really? Like, I don't know. Like, I just, to me, it was an hour of weirdness. Kind of a sweet ending to it. Like, or, you know, it had, like, kind of an emotional ending to it.
Yeah.
But honestly, man, like, it's just kind of an hour of this guy wandering around an amusement park, and there's weird shit going on, and it's all like a metaphor.
It's like for weird amusements, you know, like,
yeah.
God, the one I did really get a kick out of was the bumper cars one, though.
Like, yeah,
I thought that one was pretty amusing. It's like, this is so weird, and I can't believe that they got people to do this. And they actually, like, most of them are volunteers, except for, I guess, the main guy. He's like the only real actor.
Yeah, I think that's right. I did like the Grim Reaper kind of popping up some creepy stuff with that. I don't know. Again, it's, to me, it's a novelty. It's something neat to see. It's a piece of history. But, like, watching this as, you know, some of the reviews said, this is a fantastic film. It's totally Romero. It's, you know, and I'm just like, I don't know. He came out with The Crazies the same year. I'll take The Crazies over The Amusement Park any day.
Yes. Yes. 100%. You saw some other stuff.
Yeah. I saw a couple old movies, too. Just wanted to mention them because they I saw a couple old movies that were like new to me. Took a chance on some Blu-ray sales and I was like, whatever. And a few of them like really did. A couple of them did like blow me away. Maybe you heard of this first one, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I have heard of it.
Yeah, I thought I had seen it. I had seen the other, like, it's like a
trilogy,
part of a trilogy. Yeah, but it's like they only called it a trilogy after the fact. Like they call it the Man with No Name trilogy, but it's not like they're all separate films. They just kind of star the same people, and they were like directed by the same guy, like Sergio Leone. But it's not like you don't have to see A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More to watch The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. And if you watch all three of them thinking that they're like this continuing story, you'll be very confused about like, how did one guy die? How did this guy die in this one? And he's back in this other, like, it's because they have nothing to do with each other. So I had seen the other two before, and both of those movies, I'd always been like, I get it, but you know, nothing super amazing. Good and Bad and Ugly blew me away. I was like, holy shit. It's like this 3-hour epic, really funny throughout it. Amazing, amazing shots. Like the ending, the finale is incredible, and that's where they play. I'm sure you know the song, "The Ecstasy of Gold."
Yep.
They play that at the finale. Oh my god, it plays like gangbusters in the film. It's like this movie. It's about three guys like trying to outwit each other to get this buried gold. You know, they're all trying to get to this buried gold in the cemetery. But like throughout it, all of a sudden, like they'll suddenly stumble into the middle of the Civil War, and there's like hundreds of extras and bridges blowing up, and you're just like, this has nothing to do with the main story, but they wasted millions of dollars doing this stuff just because it's fucking awesome. Like, just to have these, like, to have this small crime story set up against this big backdrop. I loved it. I think it, you know, again. I was going off about it on Twitter like I had discovered this movie that no one had heard of, but it just made me that excited when I saw it, like how good it was. And then after I watched like the one before it, For a Few Dollars More, and I was like, eh, it's okay. You know, like I for me, for my money, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is by far the best of those three.
So I've never actually seen any of them. I'm not a Western fan. We've covered that before, but so if I was going to watch one of them, this is the one you would suggest.
In my mind, yes. It's the longest one, but you will very rarely be bored in it. Once it gets going, it's just a really fun, clever, like, cat and mouse trying to get to this money. Yes. You know, don't think of it like a Western. Think of it like a crime movie. It's basically what it is. And this other one I saw is another one I took a chance on, another crime movie called Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. This is a movie that came out in 1974. It was directed by Sam Peckinpah, who Peckinpah did like The Wild Bunch, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you look it up, if you Google Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, it'll say it's a Western, but it like takes place in, you know, modern times or whatever. Like, it takes place in 1974, so the only way it looks like a Western is because parts of it take place in Mexico and these like rundown villages where people are on horses and like they're wearing cowboy hats and stuff. So, but like, there's also people driving cars and there's people flying planes. So it's interesting. Like, it has the heart and soul of a Western, and it sometimes looks like a Western. But it's just this kind of early, gritty crime drama. Very basic setup of this mob boss guy kind of finds out his daughter is pregnant. He tortures his daughter until she says who got her pregnant. And she says, this is this guy, Alfredo Garcia. And he says, I will give $1 million to whoever brings me the head of Alfredo Garcia. And that kind of sets things in motion. And you end up, you know, it's all these criminals running around all over the country, like all over Mexico and America, looking for this fucking guy. And they question this one bartender about it, and he knows who Alfredo Garcia is, and he sets out, and he's like this total fucking fuck up drunk who sets out on his own to find this guy so he can get the reward money, and that's the movie. for both of these movies that I just mentioned, if you want to see where Quentin Tarantino gets all his stuff from, it's from these movies. Like, you could, like, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia feels like a Tarantino movie once it gets going. It's all these people chasing this fucking head in a bag. and, you know, for the good, the bad, and the ugly, you can look it up. But, like, Tarantino cites that movie all the time as his favorite movie, the movie he wished he directed, the best directed movie. I think it says on the back of the box that Tarantino says it's the best directed movie ever made. And you can really feel like how these movies influenced the stuff that he did.
Nice.
Those are both pretty strong recommends. I don't think you'd go wrong with either of them. That's it for me for movies I've seen that I wanted to mention. Did want to touch on, like, just have you seen some of these trailers that popped out? Like,
I've seen one of the ones that you want to talk about.
Halloween Kills?
Yes.
What do you think?
I kind of liked it.
I liked it too. Yeah. For sure. I'm hyped.
I'm interested to see what they do with this overall, but it seems like it's just continuing off of Halloween 2018.
Picking up at the end.
Yeah, like I like how it's just picking up very much like Halloween 2 did, the original Halloween 2, where it just picks up right at, you know, continues on from Halloween. And this is just continuing on. The house is burning with Michael inside, and like the trailer actually kind of gives away a lot in how he gets out, but it's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm wasting all these firemen. Yeah
the kill count is gonna be excessive. Like it was high in the last one for, you know, considering, you know, Michael Myers is, you know, a horror icon. He doesn't necessarily have the highest kill counts in his films.
Halloween 1, 4 or 5 kills. And that's including his sister at the beginning and some gas station guy that we don't even see, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's like, in the movie proper, there's like, what, 3 kills or something like that? Like, not super high kill count.
So like, this is, like, I think he kills like 7 or 8 firemen just in like that opening. You know, shot him leaving. It's insane.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, there's no way I was not going to like the trailer, but yeah, it just got me hyped all over again. I guess, you know, I'll just mention the other one that came out today for another big movie. It's The Many Saints of Newark, which is a prequel to The Sopranos. Hmm. And that just, to me, just is like one of these things that, like, I'm still, even though now I saw the trailer, I'm like, I can't believe this is real. Like, how on earth are we getting, like, you know, The Sopranos ended in like 2007 or 2008 or something, and now we're getting a movie in 2021. It's wild. It looks really good. It looks to kind of be about Tony Soprano, like how he became, like, him as a teenager and how he got pulled into the life of crime by his family. And the guy that's playing Tony Soprano is James Gandolfini's son, who, you know, looks a lot like a young version of his dad, which is very interesting.
That's good. It looks exciting. Like that, at least, like, because then it's not like you're, you know, trying to, like, you're imagining, like, oh, how will this progress? Like, at least if he looks like like, it's like, yeah, I can kind of.
He's got his guy. He's got his dad's eyes. He's kind of got the physique and stuff. You know, of course, I don't think, in my opinion, no one will ever touch what James Gandolfini was able to do. But, you know, this kid looks the part, at least. And the movie just looks fun, and it looks like an exciting mob movie. It doesn't look like television, even though it's the director of many of the episodes of The Sopranos.
So, you know, you're a big Sopranos fan. Is this... like, you know, you say it looks good, looks fun, but is this something like that you really need? Like, or is
it's just a treat. Okay. Like, it's just like, I think The Sopranos, you know, there's a chance they fuck everything up here too. And it's just like, I think that's the other thing I was going to touch on is like, it looks fun. It looks like a really cool mob movie. Like, it looks almost like a Scorsese level mob movie. But the thing is like, that's not what The Sopranos was. Like, yeah, that stuff was in there kind of, but it, like the actual show of The Sopranos was like, I think just a absolutely great family drama and one of the funniest shows of all time. So like it wasn't, like yeah, the mob stuff kind of happened in the background. And it was kind of like what, certain people tuned in to watch for is who's going to kill who and this and that, but it was like they were like secretly getting fed one of the best dramas of all time, like a family drama about normal. Like what made The Sopranos great was it was observations about normal actual life that everyone experiences, not the mob shit. So it's like I hope the movie is not all just we need to set up the lore of how Tony became Tony, and it's like all this fucking mob bullshit that they talked about in the show that happened back in the day. Like, I hope it's not that. I kind of trust David Chase, the creator, not to do that because one, David Chase never gave a fuck about what the audience expected, and he would like purposely fuck with, the people that were like that, that only wanted to see the mob shit. Like at some point, you just didn't care, and there'd be crazy dream episodes, like stuff that had nothing to do with who's gonna get killed next week or whatever. So, I'm hoping he hasn't lost the way in the years since. But yeah, it's just to me, it's just an unreal thing that this is happening. I hope it's good. Again, totally unnecessary. Just like El Camino, that was not necessary at all, but
Right.
I ended up liking that. Like, it doesn't feel essential to to Breaking Bad, but it was a cool add-on, I guess,
Neat.
I hope it's at least that good. I'm really hoping that it's maybe even better and maybe even works for people who haven't seen the show.
Now,
We'll see. I don't
is this gonna be this a theatrical release, but
It is, but
is it
apparently it's because it's Warner Brothers. It's come. I mean, it feels right, but
hit
HBO
HBO
Max as
Max, yeah.
well. Yeah.
Neat.
There's part of me that wants to go see it in the theater with an audience just to like react with other fans of the movie, but then there's other part of me that's just like, hey, it's gonna be on HBO Max. Let's do a watch party with all our friends that all love, like basically all my friends that live around me. We all rewatched the show within the last 3 years, so it's like we're all just kind of like, this is really neat. We should just get together and get in someone's garage or something and watch it.
That could
That's
be fun
probably
too,
how it's
yeah.
gonna go down. Yeah.
That'd
So
be
yeah,
that,
I don't know.
and then like you can like you could all pause it and just be like, hey, like that shit just happened.
Yeah. Remember when they mentioned that? Because they do sometimes talk about the past in the show proper. But
Neat.
yeah, I don't know. It just to me, it's just like mind blowing that that's a real thing, and then it actually looks good. Like I was so skeptical, I still am a little bit, but it does look good. I guess one more trailer we'll throw out, and then I'll shut up. But did you see the Candyman trailer? I think that looks pretty
I
fucking good
did, yeah,
too.
it does look pretty
Yeah.
good. I'm excited for that one.
Interesting backstory revealed in that trailer that completely different from the original movie. That Candyman was some guy giving out candy, and someone got some razor blades or something in their candy, and the cops got called on him. The cops killed him. I think that's interesting. I think that's
I think it's better than like the guy covered in honey. Like I don't know. Like I think that's a better use of it.
I just think it's an interesting
Nice update.
evolving. Yeah,
Yeah.
like a like I saw all sorts of people upset about it. People that like change anything from before, they get mad. And it's just like, dude, like one, that's like the nature of urban legends is they kind of shape over time and they'll
Right,
kind of reflect the time that they're coming out of.
and
Like
that's what the original really was,
that's
right?
and that's what it was. It wasn't important. Like the details were not important. It
Yeah,
was
like
about,
they dug into the details like more and more as that series progresses, but each of those films after the first one, which is phenomenal, are bad. Like they get worse and worse.
Oh yeah. I mean, the other ones were pretty much. I think they were both direct to video.
But
I own one of them.
the original film though is really just about it's the reporter kind of digging up on this urban legend in this area of Chicago, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's I don't know. I like the update. I think it makes more sense. you know, it's probably more relatable, especially like kids today have heard the story of like razor blades and candy. Like it's something that makes sense to them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
I think it looks great. I hope it actually turns out to be great. If I wasn't such a huge, huge Halloween fan, this would be like my most anticipated horror movie. It just looks so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think horror has a good back half.
Yeah. I think movies in general, yeah.
Yeah, I said that at the top, like... but... and, yeah, speaking of, I guess, films that are out in theaters, I did not get to go see the new Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I did watch... I did rewatch the entire series over the last
What do you got? You got the set?
I have them all. Like I think I bought a set at one point.
Over the years.
Yeah, like I was like picking them up, and like at some point I was like, oh, I guess I should buy Tokyo Drift. Now I have them all.
Awesome.
Like I didn't rewatch Hobbs and Shaw, but
yeah, well that one doesn't matter as much, right? Like
no, it's it's probably better than. Half of the film.
The reason I ask is because I've seen that there is a set and it goes on sale for pretty cheap all the time. But I guess if you built the set organically as they came out and whatnot, like
yeah, and I'm not. It's like you know when new Star Wars box sets come out, like I like to get them because I like the new artwork and
yeah.
Like the latest. Like I'm not like resetting. I'm gonna buy the Fast and Furious 9 disc box set. Again, like no, I'm good. I got them already. they're fun movies. They get really stupid, but when they get really stupid, that's when the series I think really gets good. And it kind of kicks off with Fast Five, which you know we talked about years ago. It's an excellent action movie. The series never reaches that height again. but
that's like. When it hit the mold of what the series is
yes,
now.
Like
right?
At that point it was like, yo, we're gonna make them kind of into heroes, like they're not really at that point, they're still criminals.
It's just the weirdest fucking series ever.
By 6 and 7, by 6
like
I think
James Bond, yes. And it's just like weren't these the guys that were ripping off like DVD players or whatever?
They were robbing tractor trailers filled with DVD players in the first movie. So yes, like it is reached an outlandish proportion now, and now it's almost like it's an organic comic book movie in a way. Like it's created this universe that everybody is in. Everybody is involved in this. Like Kurt Russell is in the series. Charlize Theron's in the series. Jason Statham, The Rock. Like it has everybody. But it's this weird original series that just keeps morphing and changing. I do think that they lost something when Paul Walker died during production of
Seven. Yeah.
He grounds the films like he is kind of a normal human.
Yeah.
And Vin Diesel is very much not a normal human.
Vin Diesel?
He's very Vin Diesel, yes.
Very, what's the guy's name? Dom?
Dom, yeah.
The fuck do I know this? I've seen two of the movies.
Dominic Toretto.
Yep, I know it. Yeah, that's so weird.
I mean, it's out there. Like, he is pop culture at this point. But it's just funny watching these all and to hear the backstory of, like, I think it just hit again, like, where Vin Diesel was, like, talking about his feud with The Rock. He's like his argument for why they got into it was because he was always trying to push The Rock to be a better actor. I'm like, dude, The Rock, not a phenomenal actor, but he has so much more range and is such a better performer than Vin Diesel ever is in these movies. It's hysterical that he was like, I just wanted him to be better, man.
Well, it is funny, like. First off, it's ridiculous that these two fucking meatheads were fighting with each other. But Diesel, there was a time when Diesel was trying to be a serious actor, well before any of this shit, but there was a time he would show up in dramas like Boiler Room. He was not bad. But in Fast and the Furious, it's like...
He is meathead extreme. And you're right. Like, the guy can act. Like, he has shown up in Boiler Room. There's a couple other, dramas that he is in.
He was like he played a lawyer, and I forgot the fucking name of it.
Yeah,
anyways,
sort of blank, but yeah, but it's just funny because like these movies are not, they are not thespian films. Like,
yeah.
they are high energy, comedic, action films with cars doing absurd shit, and that's what people come to watch. Like, they come to watch for the one liners that Ludacris and Tyrese give. They're there for the cars driving through skyscrapers across each other, like jumping out of windows into another sky. They're there for that absurd level of bullshit, like jumping out of planes with parachutes attached to their cars or running from submarines. They're not there because like they want to see The Rock and Vin Diesel put on like an acting showcase. Like, they want to see bullets and chicks and thongs and cars going fast and exploding. And the series delivers that. Does a great job.
But you kind of admit, because it's something that that Lex G podcast that I listened to, he kind of said that, like, there's something lost. I think, like you said, it, there's something lost after Paul Walker.
There is. Like, there.
But even he's like a huge fan. Even he admitted it. He's like, by the time we're on 8, it's not really, like, it's kind of lost some steam for him.
And it's so weird. So like, having just watched them, watching Furious 7, and they there's this scene where, like, Brian, Paul Walker's character, he's out on the beach with Mia, his wife, Dom's sister, and their son. And the rest of the crew is just kind of, like, looking at him, and they're talking about him. And, like, at this point, like, it's obviously this was tacked on to the film, but it's like they're giving like a weird eulogy. But they don't acknowledge that he is still alive in that film universe. So like they make reference to him in 8, like,
so weird.
Brian would know what to do, and then
maybe someone should call him.
That's like the Ludacris or Tyrese or something, like they're like, you know, Brian would know what to do, and Michelle Rodriguez, like, no, we promised Dom we wouldn't call him. We wouldn't bring him into this. And it's like, oh my God. Like, that's so bad. It's so
weird.
You don't. Just ignore the fact that, like, you can just write Brian out of the series. You don't need to acknowledge that he exists in it. He just never shows up again.
They could have ended it, because I've seen that ending of the one.
It should have ended there. It should have ended.
Yep. But it's like these movies make so much money that they're like, nope.
Oh, yeah, they're billion-dollar films single time. Like, since, I think 6 is like the first time it hit $1 billion. And each one since then has hit $1 billion. Like, they're just super huge money makers. And now, like, the John Cena's in it now. Like, I don't know. I'm going to go see 9. I'm not expecting anything. You know, I just want to see cars blow up and, like, chicks' butts. Like,
I'm sure you'll get it.
So if I get that, I'll be happy. And honestly, like, there's rumors evidently that Universal wants a crossover between Jurassic Park and this.
They should.
And yeah, do that. Sure. I'm in for watching, like, this stupid team of car thieves. At that point, you don't need Vin Diesel. Let him retire. Bring back the side characters. Bring back, you know, Tyrese and Ludacris and the other couple that they have, and have them like race against dinosaurs. but fun.
They should do it. Like, it's not like even like Jurassic Park is a sacred cow anymore either. Like, the last one sucked.
Oh, so bad.
So, you know, who cares? Just do it. Like, you might get me to go. Like, I've never been a fan of these Fast and Furious movies, but shit, you do that, I'll be like, I just gotta see what the fuck this is.
Yeah, like, it's like so dumb.
Dom is gonna take on the fucking dinosaurs. All right,
just like wrestling a Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah, so yeah, like,
But yeah, so I'll go see F9 probably this coming weekend. Yeah, they're fun movies, but they're not much to them.
Well, you'll have to let us know next time.
We'll do.
How this one went.
But I guess that brings us to our main event.
Woo!
My Tobe Hooper double header, which was inspired by the fact that I wanted to watch Life Force.
Yeah.
So I paired Life Force against Invaders from Mars. And we're going to kick off with Invaders from Mars because there's a little bit more to talk about with Life Force.
Okay.
David Gardner just woke up to a nightmare in his own backyard. But no one will listen.
We landed right back there, right behind the hill.
No one will believe.
I told you, he needs psychiatric help.
And soon, no one will be left.
Dad? Are you okay, Dad?
Fine.
Because something strange is happening to the people of Willow Creek.
Everything's fine now.
And David Gardner is about to find out why.
David! I'm gonna find my mom and dad!
I'm Vicky's! No!
David Gardner?
Canon Films presents Tobe Hooper's Invaders from Mars. There's no place on Earth to hide.
Invaders from Mars, Tobe Hooper's 1986 release for Canon Films. Low budget, $7 million, and it made about $4.9 million in its box office, so kind of a bomb.
Just a side note here. Do you think it looks low budget?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it did either.
No. Anyways, we'll get into that shortly. But it is technically a remake of a 1950s movie of the same name, and that I think carries over. Like, this is not like, oh, let's make a gritty.
No.
You know, new Invaders from Mars. Like, this is Tobe Hooper making a 1950s sci-fi film.
Yeah.
And I think he actually does a pretty good job with it. Like, I mean, we'll get into the plot in a second, but
yeah.
He captures, to me at least, he captured, you know, what he was trying to do and just, like, giving an updated version of one of those, you know, sci-fi invasion movies.
Yeah,
And you kind of touched on it. The visual effects look really good, and I lend some
Stan
of that
Winston,
to
I think.
John Dykstra, is Stan Winston and John Dykstra. John Dykstra from Star Wars.
Yeah,
Stan Winston, who you know he worked on Terminator, Jurassic Parks, Aliens. Like
he does like the creatures and stuff in here.
Yep, great work by both of them here on the low budget that Canon kind of gave them. But what this film is this little boy, George, he wants to be an astronaut and, he's out watching the stars with his dad. They see a comet go by and, you know, they talk about, space and shit. And he gives him a penny like that comes into play later. Like lots of like neat touches early on. Like
Spielberg vibes.
Yeah. Like
I wrote down.
Yeah, very very Spielberg-y in the way it's kind of delivered. Thunderstorm happens. It wakes up the little boy, and he looks out the window, and actually his name's David, I think, not George. George's the dad. He looks out the window and he sees an alien spacecraft landing in his backyard. Like just over the hill. He freaks out a bit, goes and wakes up his dad and his mom, and like they come out and like don't see nothing. go back to bed, David. And, you know, he goes back to bed, wakes up in the morning. His dad's acting really fucking strange.
Does he like pour Tic Tacs into his coffee? Is that what he was doing? I couldn't figure it out.
I thought that at first too. I think it's actually salt.
He's pouring salt into his coffee, and then he like downs like this super hot coffee.
Just guzzles.
It's spilling down. Yeah, so he's like, you know, he's doing the like I've been replaced routine where it's just like.
And
the person doesn't really know how to act as a human, all that, you know?
And I think aside from the weird behavior, right? Like, we get, like, it's not the George we saw in the opening scene. Like, he's very loving towards his son, and they have a very, like, friendly relationship. And then, you know, when he wakes up, very standoffish, like, very, I don't belong here type of approach.
Yeah.
David thinks something's up, but can't really, like, put his finger on it. So he runs off to school, and some shit happens there. And then that's kind of where things kind of progress further and further. Is, you know, they have weird dinner, and his mom ends up going for a walk with his dad over the hill.
Oh, no, mom!
Yeah, he's screaming out the window. Like, really cool there. Like, very 1950s sci-fi vibe where he's like, no, dude, mom!
Alright, like, we should mention this now. Like, so, like, the shot of when he looks out the window, anytime he looks out the window, like, their backyard totally looks like a set. Like, yes. And I'm sure it is, but it looks like a set in the way The Wizard of Oz looks like a set.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Like, it looks like a Wizard of Oz set.
Like, it's like a perfect hill with this fence going along it. It looks like it, you know, was adapted from a painting or something. Like,
super picturesque.
But he's going for that. Like, he's going for that, you know, 50s vibe.
Yep.
So,
yep. Spot on with all of that. Next day, mom comes back and she's acting weird in the morning as well. She starts eating raw hamburger with salt sprinkled on it. Like, just like right from, like, she like pulls out like a pound of ground beef and just starts talking about making hamburgers, and she's just eating it raw. And the boy kind of knows something's up at this point. So he runs out of there. I think at that point it's like then the teacher
trying to tell a teacher. He's trying to tell a teacher, I think. Doesn't he find, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead, but doesn't he find the teacher like eating a frog?
Yeah. So he has a problem with his science teacher. His science teacher's kind of an asshole and doesn't like him.
Did you recognize who that is?
I did not.
That is Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Really?
Yeah. It's just 10 years on. But yeah, that's totally her. Yeah. I was like, is that her? And I like had to go look it up, go through that whole routine.
So she's acting really weird. And he walks into her office and she's like making slurping noises. And she turns around and she has half of a fucking frog in her mouth. And she just
cool scene,
like,
I thought.
Yeah, it's like really, really good looking. She just swallows the frog and then like, what are you doing, David? And he like, you know, obviously having just seen his teacher swallow a live frog, flips out a bit, runs out, knocks over this little girl, and he flees to the nurse, who he kind of trusts a bit, and she kind of becomes our kind of adult that is attached to David for the rest
of the time. Like they become the duo who are trying to
stop this. And she weirdly believes him. Like,
she tries to ask him questions and he has an answer. He's like, why would the teacher, you know? He's like, well, the teacher said that she got the frogs from over by my house, so maybe that's it.
Yeah,
you know?
he has an answer.
Like, yeah.
But it is funny because, like, in so many other films, it's like, you know, adults just don't believe kids, and this one is very willing to, like, listen to him and go,
yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Like, your story's a little outlandish, but let me let me investigate. So he tells her about that, you know, hey, Mrs. McLeach has, she has like this scar on the back there. She has a bandage over it, but you know, it's where they get you.
So to me, it makes it a little too easy to tell who's an alien or not. Like, the thing about these invasion movies is that the person, like, is just a little off. But, like, if they have a mark on them, then you know. Like,
yep.
I don't know. It seems like a flaw in the design.
And possibly is. We'll get there quite right at the end. So, yeah, this nurse, you know, she questions Miss McLeach and... Oh, like, she doesn't want to show her. She's like, give me the boy. Like, no, yeah, I'm good. Like, he ran away or something like that. The parents show up and try and get him, but she's told him to leave.
Yeah.
She
gives him the keys to her house, right? Like,
yeah, like, go run here, and I'm going to, like, figure out what's going on. And, like, I'll come get you. We'll make sure everything is safe. But he gets spotted as he's leaving, like, and he's kind of getting stalked. So he hides in an open van, which happens to be Miss McLeach's. And they end up out at the field, where, you know, they kind of realize this is where the aliens are. They're underground. They've actually buried their ship, and there's tunnels and everything else into there. And so that's when David and Linda kind of go, hey, we need to bring in some people. And the general from NASA, or I guess not from NASA, but from the Air Force or the Army, shows up.
Yeah.
And that's, they start going, we're going to take these aliens out. They full on believe everything. They're just like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, that they're straight up cartoon G.I. Joes, like, and yeah. This guy is over the top, General Wilson. But also, like, you know, he's very attentive to David and Linda, and you know, despite the fact that they could have taken this the hard way and been like, he's going to be like the tough nosed kind of aliens type guy, right? Like the sergeant from Aliens, not this nice little 1950s general guy. But they stick with the nice kind of almost child friendly approach to it. And there's this whole goofy scene with the aliens. The main alien kind of looks like a giant brain.
Yeah.
Really
cool though.
Design. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has these drones that are these like big hulking, but slow.
They look like the Bugs and Pikmin to me.
Yeah.
Like the shape of them and stuff, they're cool. Like, they're cool looking, they're cool, but they also like let you know that this is kind of for kids.
Yes.
Kind of goofy. Like, they look awesome,
but they're not frightening. Silly. Like kids, yeah, could watch this and not be terrified of it.
Although that said, I've seen, you know, this is PG. I watched the first two Indiana Jones movies this week, and it's like, man, we used to trust kids with a little bit more than we do nowadays, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the stuff that they got away with in these movies. Like, these things are eating people in this, and, like, you know, there's, like, this scary-looking thing coming out of people's necks and stuff. I'm like, they really, like,
oh, there,
used to go for it.
There's a great scene that mimics the frog scene with the teacher, where one of those big things actually eats the teacher.
Yeah, it's they see the it, like, swallowing her awesome. Whole. Yeah.
It's really cool. Evidently, the aliens are here because we have copper, and copper is their fuel and weapon source.
Nice touch.
Their ammo source, which, yeah, it's a nice touch to that penny.
Yeah.
At the beginning, and the pennies that he's been collecting. And that penny comes in handy at the end, because like, they need, we need a way out of here, because they've sealed off the ship, and they have this alien gun, but no way to power it. And he pulls out the penny his dad gave him to fire a hole out of there. It's really neat, like really smart in the way that's done, like very easily, very easy to follow. Nice callbacks to the beginning. And it's ultimately, you know, they all get out. all the adults are kind of saved, and then he wakes up, and it's kind of revealed that maybe all this has been a dream, which is a little weird.
The ultimate cop out. Like, I think that the it was all a dream ending is a huge cop out, but there's one cop out higher than the it was all a dream ending, and that is it was all a dream, or was it?
Right.
Ultimate cop out ending. Make a choice. Figure it out. God, I hate that. Sorry. It's just like, you know, it's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah. And then
you went all out on it here.
Yeah. And this, I mean, I was having a lot of fun with this up until that ending where it was like, oh, guess what? Like the previous 90 minutes you watched of this didn't mean anything.
It's like any other ending you would have came up with would be better. It doesn't matter. It could be a terrible ending. It would be better than it was all just a dream. I hate that. It's just like, it's lazy. It's just a lazy ending that tons of movies do, and they still do to this day. I fucking hate it. It brought down a lot for me, but it was already starting to lose me a little bit at the end.
It's a little overlong.
Yes. Why is this 1 hour and 40 minutes? This could be a tight 90. Easily.
They could have cut a little bit out of this, especially in that, like, the last area when they're on the ship takes about 20 minutes or so. You could have toned that up a whole lot and made it run a whole lot quicker.
The military is ready to blow everything up by the hour mark, and we have another 40 minutes. Like, yeah. I'm just like, how... It started to lose, like, to me, I love the Invasion of the Body Snatchers type movies. I love that. It's just weird to me because I remember hating this movie as a kid and I had no memory of it. So I just remember, oh yeah, I saw that movie and I didn't like it. And I thought it was because it was too kid friendly. And it kind of is. But at the same time, when I was a kid, I also saw the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers from the 50s and I loved that. So when I'm watching this today, I'm like, oh, this is, I love this type of movie. I'm totally into it. And then just kind of went a little too long and it got less interesting near the end where it was just like, let's try to blow everything up. I mean, for the most part, I was like way more entertained than I expected because I remember not liking it as a kid. So,
yeah. And I had never seen it before. So,
yeah,
but I really did like, you know, kind of his approach with, you know, trying to make it into a modern day 1950s film instead of let's make it this, like, you know, the 80s is kind of when that started, like let's make these older things more gritty and more adult. Yeah. And this, like, no, we're going the opposite way. We're just going to make this goofy kids film
just with better effects. You know, it's the same thing but with better effects. I do wish that, because even those old 50 movies sometimes really, like, had a point to them, and this, to me, I didn't feel that. I saw some reviews, like, where people were, like, saying that this is about the Reagan era, and I'm like, I don't know. I didn't get much out of it other than he was trying to replicate the movies he grew up on.
Yeah, I don't see, like,
I feel like an homage to old monster, old, you know, alien invasion movies, but, yes. Like, he could put some more spin on it, in my opinion, to make it feel like it had more of a point. Because really, at the end, just feels like it was just a kid's adventure. Like,
there is no point, right? It is just this adventure film that, you know, has some decent effects and is entertaining for the majority of it. I think if you're trying to dig in and try to find some deeper meaning here, I think you're probably digging in the wrong hole.
Oh yeah, two other people I noticed in this. The general, I think, is the guy from Return of the Living Dead. Like, the guy, I didn't even look up his name or anything, but he's like the guy at the beginning of it, like, that discovers the canister in Return of the Living Dead. And the nurse, like, you know, the kid's partner through this whole thing is Karen Black. She's in tons of stuff, but you would, like, most people today would recognize her as the mom from House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects.
Oh, okay.
That was her.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's to derail you.
James Caron was the he was the general. He's in a ton of stuff, like Return of the Living Dead, like you said.
Yeah.
But also, you know, he was in Poltergeist and
which
is also a Tobe Hooper film.
Directed by Tobe Hooper, not Spielberg. Just throwing it out right there. Diving into that controversy for a second.
Yeah. But yeah. I liked it, I guess. One other note, I guess, here, there is a scene where you know, David comes home from school. It's after his dad starts acting really kind of weird. He's sitting there, he turns on the TV and Life Force is playing.
Yes, that was in my notes. I forgot to mention it. I was like, cool nod to a film he made a year before.
Yeah, which is funny, but like, I mean, it is like, hey, like, this is neat. I think both made by Canon as well.
He did, like, it was cool. Canon got very ambitious by the mid 80s, and you know, they had like their stable of, they had like the Chuck Norris movies, they had the Charles Bronson doing the Death Wish movies and stuff, and they were trying to make Tobe Hooper one of their directors, and he did like a trilogy of movies for them. He did these two, and he did Texas Chainsaw 2. And then, you know, then Canon fucked everything up. They got the He-Man license, they got Superman license, and they just fucking... Yeah. They were on a roll there for a minute. They were like, they were trying to really, and I think that shows in when we start to talk about Life Force, like, they were kind of really trying to make a go at being a serious studio.
Yeah, and I just wonder, we're, you know, this lost money for Canon. It's a low budget film, but it lost money. And Life Force was, it wasn't a huge budget, but it was much bigger than this. It was
their biggest budget film, yeah, I think, ever.
And it was basically a bomb, as well. So I do wonder if maybe that might have been a reason they twisted off of there. But it's a shame, because we're going to get into Life Force shortly, but I think these are two pretty good films. So,
you know, they were at the end of the day a poorly run business, but because they had this like wild cowboy attitude, I mean, they made some of the most fun stuff in the '80s. Like, they just, a lot of it was junk, but they were ambitious, and I guess we'll get into this on the next one. You know, they did get ambitious there, but they just, a lot of cocaine, a lot of bad business decisions, probably borrowing money, you know, like.
Yeah. What, do you have any final thoughts on Invasion, Invaders from Mars? Sorry, tongue tied there. Any final thoughts on Invaders from Mars?
Yeah, it's much better than I remember it being. I think, like I said it last episode, at the time when I was a kid and it came out, if it was PG, I would scoff at stuff. And, you know, I wanted to see slasher movies at the time. It's so funny because it's a movie for kids. And love Invasion of the Body Snatcher type movies. This is basically Invasion of the Body Snatchers for kids with a kid protagonist. And it really catches your interest early on. I think for me personally, it starts to peter out once we get to the big, like, explosive ending. Awesome creature effects, cool looking sets, which is something we'll talk about in the other movie too. It's just like cool looking shit. Like, it looks like they spent money on it, even though they didn't spend too much on this one. They got good bang for their buck. It's just, to me, like, I started to lose interest when it didn't feel like it was going anywhere. And then the ending, number one pet peeve, it was all just a dream, or maybe it wasn't. So,
yeah, that really deflated me. I'm usually not like, oh, that's like the worst thing going, but it really deflated this, because like, there were no consequences to anything. And
yeah, it's just like, okay, it was
cool. Yeah. Like, yeah, there was a cool monster design, I guess.
But I guess it didn't matter because it was all just kid dreaming in bed. Like,
kid has a really active imagination. I'll give him that. Like, but I enjoyed it. I didn't know what to expect going in, but I'm kind of happy with the fact that it was this kind of replication of 1950s sci-fi. So good on Toby Hooper.
But that's the other thing is, like, I would rather watch the real deal in that case. Like, sure. I think the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers is better than this, and the remake is definitely better than this. But this is fun for kids, I think, and the effects hold up pretty well. So,
yeah, a very smart call getting Stan Winston and John Dykstra, to do their effects. So they elevated this low budget film quite a bit. Okay, final ranking, Jeff.
6.
I am also going with a 6. So a pair of 6s for Invaders from Mars. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back with Life Force.
They watched. They waited. Now their time has come. Out of the depths of space, the ultimate terror. Moving, searching. Destroying. From body to body, from life to life, from man to woman, changing, growing, burning for our life force. From the director of Poltergeist, from the special effects creator of Star Trek The Motion Picture, Life Force. In the blink of an eye, the terror begins.
All right, so that brings us to Life Force.
Yeah!
Released a year earlier, same company by Canon, on a budget of $25 million, bringing in... What was that?
Which I think I already mentioned this, but as far as I understand, is their biggest budget movie.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because it's Superman after this. On the cheap.
Which Superman did they do?
The Nuclear Man or whatever.
Quest for Peace. They did it on a cheaper budget than 20. Jesus.
Yeah. No, well, I mean,
the film was garbage.
It's so funny. I saw that movie at the drive-in as a kid. I loved it. I wouldn't have known. That's how, you know, I'm a stupid little kid. I didn't know better. I thought Superman 3 and 4 were great.
I ironically love Superman 3, but just it's so stupid. anyway, budget of $25 million, Canon's largest, and it brought in a box office of $11.6 million.
Something else interesting to note here is that the writer of this, and I think Invaders from Mars, is Dan O'Bannon.
Yep.
Who did Alien? He wrote Alien, right?
I believe he is one of the two writers on Alien.
Anyways, just because I think that I think you could see that. I think you could feel that in Life Force, especially.
Yep, Dan O'Bannon is one of the two credited writers on Alien. Yeah, and I could definitely see where those ties come in. It's based on a novel called The Space Vampires, which is, that's what this film is.
Yeah.
It stars Steven Railsback, who
looks like Christian Bale to me.
A little bit, yep. Peter Firth, Frank Finlay, Matilda May, and Patrick Stewart when he popped up, I was like, wow. definitely.
I saw this a week ago.
Yeah.
I saw this a week ago, and so, you know, it's not as fresh in my memory as Invaders from Mars, but man, there's so many things in it like that. That was one of them. Okay, Patrick Stewart.
Just out of nowhere, like, I mean, this definitely before, like, Patrick Stewart obviously is, you know, he had a huge acting career before...
it's so wild, though, because I think he's like 35 in this and he looks 50.
Yeah,
like,
he looks so old. Like, he just looks.
He always looked old. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's crazy. But, yeah, so Patrick Stewart is in this. Anyway, film starts off in space. It is there's a joint British and American space shuttle, and they are out kind of looking at Halley's Comet when they notice that there is this large object kind of hidden in the tail of the comet. And as they get closer, they see that it's some sort of alien spaceship, which they then head to in some very badly animated special effects here. The EVA, the spacewalk to the spaceship is maybe not the best looking thing that anybody's ever seen. And once they get there, it feels very, very alien.
Yeah, that's why I brought up who the writer was, because it feels like the beginning of the Alien. They've discovered these things, it's like humanoid things and these glass cases. So not exactly like Alien, but they decide to bring them aboard, and it's like, oh, that's just, like, we're in Alien territory here. We're, you know, and
so done. Goes
not so well for them.
These damn space people, so stupid. Yeah, they bring these weird crystal sarcophaguses on board their spaceship, and then we cut to we cut to back to Earth, and the spaceship is kind of just floating out there. Houston and the British Space Command are kind of trying to get in touch with it. They can't. They launch the Challenger. Which at the time, like, I heard that and I was like, holy shit, like,
I didn't even catch that.
Because, well, at first I was like, oh no. Like, because right shortly after this film, is the Columbia space disaster. And I was like, oh my god, that's what I immediately thought was that they called it the Columbia. They called it the Challenger, which is also a tragic space accident.
Yeah,
but that would happen some, like, almost 20 years later. But yeah, so, you know, interesting tie there. And they send the Challenger up and find out that the Churchill, the spaceship that is now circling Earth, has been burned out from the inside out. There's no survivors on board, but the crystal sarcophaguses are there, and they bring them home to Earth because humans are just stupid.
Yeah, let's make the same mistake twice. And it's like these three humanoid, you know, they look like humans. One very beautiful woman who is naked for 90% of all of the movie? I don't know. She's naked throughout.
She puts some clothes on towards the end.
Okay. Yes,
she is naked.
Fully naked.
Majority. A very... Matilda May is... She's a good-looking...
Yeah, dude. Good-looking woman. Like, holy shit. Like... and, you know, one of many things for me that I'm like, alright, this is a point in its favor.
Yeah, like I think at one point,
the eyes the whole time watching this chick walk around. Like
at one point, the main character who was one of the he was on the spaceship, I believe, Colonel Tom. He kind of makes note that, like, she's like the perfect, like, embodiment of mm-hmm. a female. And, like, they did a awesome job of casting that, because this woman is, like, perfectly proportioned.
This movie is super horny, too. Like, cat people horny. Like,
yes.
And I kind of love that. I love they make people describe over and over, like, the feeling that overcomes them when they're, like, around these things. And they're like, it's the most, you know... Like, overwhelming attraction, like, you don't understand, and then, like, I'm like, that's a, it's an interesting idea, like, I like that, like.
Yeah, that it's, they've tapped into kind of the, maybe the one area of humanity that you can override, and it's like, there's no inhibitions at that point, so we're just gonna, like, we're gonna tap into sexuality as your weakness, because we need to get your life force. But before we kind of like learn all about that, they start poking and prodding these alien beings that obviously does not work out well for anybody involved. And the female, she wakes up and she sucks the life out of this poor guard, turns him into like, basically sucks like the life out of him and ages him tremendously.
Turns him into a husk, basically.
Yeah, it's like he's almost been mummified or like, decayed.
Yeah.
She now has some power. She's able to like manipulate electricity and other things. And obviously, you know, she's able to utilize her, feminine wiles, I guess, and kind of take over psychically. And she kind of, with her beauty and her mind traps, she's able to convince people to move out of the way or do things for her. Very cool. Like that, the whole escape sequence, she's just like casually walking out completely naked, but doing like some terrible damage along the way. Really, really cool scene. And now we kind of know how the vampirism of the space vampires works.
To me, it gets very complicated. Like,
yeah, the more to it, but obviously, like they are sucking the life force out of humans.
It keeps them regular. It turns the humans into these husks, like these dried out zombies, basically.
Yep. And then, like shortly after that, we then learn that they're not dead yet. They've just been turned into. They've been turned into these husks, which can then feed on other people and take their life force.
Yeah, they're like less powerful versions of the three source ones, right? Yes. Like, that was kind of confusing me at first, because I'm like, why do these guys turn dead and then they come back? But then, like, you know, I don't know, dude. It's like, you're creating... This movie's very ambitious, in my opinion, and it's like a lot of world building, too much... To a point. Yeah,
there's a lot of rules, and like they follow them, dude. But it's like it's asking a lot of the viewer.
It feels like it's layering on top as it goes along, and it's just like it gets to a point where there's so many layers to the rules and stuff that I'm like, it was having trouble keeping up with it. Maybe I'm a simpleton, but I'm just like, dude, what the fuck? But I don't want to get ahead of what, you know, I'm sure you're going to touch on some of this stuff, so.
Yeah, so at, you know, they've realized that she's sucking the life force out of him. They're about to do an autopsy on the guy she sucked the life force out of, and he wakes up, sucks the life force out of another doctor, and that's what they're like, hey, everybody gets fucking quarantined. Lock them all the fuck up. And that's when things kind of go a little batshit, because we learn that if they don't feed every 2 hours and they have to be like right up on top of you to take your life force, basically they just disintegrate and explode into dust or ash or whatever.
Very cool. Very cool looking.
Yeah, very cool effect.
Also, these husks, like, you'd be forgiven for thinking like it's makeup effects, but like some of them, like the main ones, are animatronics, like very complicated animatronics that I think what was it, 20 something people would operate, like, and they look cool, man. They hold up. I think they really look cool.
Very, very good looking. Like, they look real, and it's something that we've talked about a lot on the show, with like practical effects just hold up so much better than CGI ones. Because compare the creature effects here of these husks to like that EVA early on. And it's like, it's night and day. It's like, it's so much better. The escape pod shows up, from the Churchill that has, Colonel Carlson inside of it. They fly this guy out to London and make him kind of retell the events of what happened on the Churchill. He gives an explanation that seems reasonable. And it's clear though that he has some sort of link with the female alien. But he's blamed everything at this point on like one of his crew members, and he's kind of like giving half of a story as it goes along, and we're now playing this like cat and mouse game where it's like you don't know if you should trust him or not. He seems reasonable, but something's off, especially because he has this link. And they just start layering on more and more aspects, like where they go and interview this other female, and he gets all sorts of rough with her, like in a weirdly sexual way. Like I thought he was just gonna like.
She likes it. She's a masochist. Like she gets off on it.
Yeah, it's like if I don't do this, she's not gonna tell us.
Yeah,
like it's just like this is really weird, and like the other guy's just like I'll watch. I'm into it.
Yeah, the other guy's like I look to watch. I'm a voyeur. I think like it's so. Like I said, this is a super horny movie, and it's horny in a way that like you just don't get nowadays, in my opinion. Like I think movies have really shied away from sex over the years. Especially over the last decade. I personally appreciate the sex and the horniness. I really do.
Yeah, which we just lost Craig, but it's fine. I have the backup here. It's weird because sex and horror has always gone together. Like,
yeah,
it's always kind of been tied together. And yeah, it's this weird thing that we've shied away from it. And now it is... we're just going to go straight to the gore, and we're not going to have, we're not going to tie it to any sort of sex or anything.
This movie.
Yeah. This one doesn't, and like, you know what? It's a vampire film in a sense. They're space vampires, but it is still a vampire film. And like out of all of the creatures in, you know, horror history, vampires definitely have, the most sexual energy
for sure. I mean,
with them, so
even back in Dracula, dude, like it was there, yeah. You know, it's you're sinking your teeth into someone's neck. It's like there's no way to remove the sex from that, I think, almost.
Yeah, it's like it is purely there. And like vampires are definitely a sexual stand-in in some cases.
Yeah, and they stay young and handsome and all that, you know what I mean? Like, it's that is, you know, built into vampire stories, but just movies in general, it's cool to see this, like, kind of big-budget movie from the 80s be, like, the scene that we kind of derailed on here, it's like, it's wild, dude. He's, like, choking this chick.
It is a like, weird scene.
I like to watch, and I'm like, what the fuck?
It is a cool. Really weird scene, especially like coming from horror films today, where we just we don't get that. Like, yeah, there may be some sort of like S&M type thing, but it is not in a vampire horror film. Like,
yeah,
but yeah, he like kind of like beats this information out, and they track it down to the psychiatric hospital. Which is where we're kind of introduced to Patrick Stewart's character. And he's a doctor for the psychiatric hospital, and he is treating a patient there, or so we think. And it turns out that he's actually the killer. He's locked somebody else up, and like there's like so much going on. Like I kind of lost track of it at this point.
Yeah, it's so plot heavy, dude. Like that's probably my biggest criticism of the movie. It's so plot heavy. It's so like it's dense. You know what I mean? You're like, dude, what? Where are we now? Who is this?
And it's like, why?
Like, they're jumping from body to body, and they could, like, you know,
yeah, because that's the thing we get out of the S&M chick is that she's jumping from, she can now possess people, and she's jumping from, you know, that body to another body, and she can do that kind of at will. and then leave them, and they're not husks. Like, they are, they're just, they're left, and they are as they are. And yeah, and then they introduce this whole thing with Patrick Stewart, and it's like, what is going on? Like, I looked away for a minute, and now I don't know what the fuck is happening exactly, in this film. Exactly. Like, they're shapeshifters, but they're not, but they are. And there's so many characters. And it's like, I don't really know what's going on at this point. Fortunately, it does circle back on itself, and it makes itself a little bit more simplistic, where it's just like, hey, martial law has been declared. People are going crazy inside of London. It's basically vampire zombies running around. Everybody's turning into vampires, sucking each other's bloods, blowing up. It's easy to understand, right?
It's like that combined with like this big apocalyptic, like alien invasion style ending, where like, yeah, London's blowing up, the whole Earth is getting sucked off into this fucking spaceship. Like, it's like wild, it really is.
Their ship by sucking the life force out of everybody, they're powering up their ship, and it's like, are they coming down here? Like, what is happening? And we get this other one, Peter Firth. He is the British kind of SAS colonel. He's our other main character. He's like, I'm gonna go in. He like goes in to take out these vampires that are in the city, because Carlson's been drawn there by the lead vampire. She's brought him in because they have that psychic link from the spaceship, and he needs to put an end to it. So he kind of like heads in there, where he ends up having to fight off the two other vampires. And I forgot. There's that whole thing about how we kill them. Like that actually gets layered in there.
The old way. I'm like, the old way. What?
But it's like,
what is it? It's like, it's not metal, or it's not a wooden stick through our. It's metal, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's lead.
It's through their life center. Like, what are we talking about?
Like oddly specific with that too, though, right? It's like has to be this type of lance, made out of, I think it was lead, and it has to be stabbed like about 2 inches below the heart. Because that is where their, as you said, like their life center is.
It's just, I appreciate that they took the time to think all this out and build it out. It almost feels like literature. But man, it's like, this is just it's another almost throwaway detail in like dozens of details that you have to keep track of in this movie. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot to like for a first viewing. This is your and I's first viewing of this. It's like a lot to take in. Like, it's just like, what the fuck is this? I think if I do it, like watch this again, I'll be able to parse it out a little better. Yeah. I know the big beats it's going to hit, you know?
Right. Cause like, that's like, all right, I'm going to pay attention to like what this guy is saying, because he's revealing a little bit more about the rules of how things play out. When you're trying to watch everything all at once, it's like so much information.
It's a lot.
And unfortunately, like, it, you know, this is a film that is, I think it was about 140 minutes. Actually, I think I watched I might have watched the international cut, which is 150 minutes. So it's a little bit longer. That's not a lot of time for the amount of density that this film has. To kind of relay all that. You never have a chance to breathe, so you can't actually process the information that you're getting, because it's going to the next plot point.
Yes, you feel like you understand what they just said, and then right after that, you have to digest something else. Like, it's probably my biggest criticism, but like, it's part of, I think, what I admire too about it. But
yeah, because we don't get stuff like that anymore, right? It's like,
here's the basic
premise, and we're just going to run with that, and it doesn't matter if it makes sense or not. Like, the reality is this film, all the rules connect. They all make sense. Yeah. It's just there's so much of them that it's a bit tough to watch fortunately, the visuals are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a cool scene, like, right at the end, like, when Kane gets up, the SAIS, he fights the other two vampires on the steps of this church, takes them out with his lance, and then goes inside, and, like, for whatever reason, now Carlson and the lady vampire are... lady vampire... Her official name in the credits is Space Girl. So the Space Girl and Carlson are... They've gone into, like, this weird hole. they're no longer in the church... They're kind of in this, like, alternate dimension. I don't know how they got there. Doesn't really explain, but they're just down there, like, I don't know, they're fucking, right? Like, they were fucking. Like, they're just, like, they're not showing it, but they're standing next to each other naked, embraced in, like, this, it is a very sexual looking position. Like, it is, like, they're standing, but he has his dick inside her. Like, there's no getting around that. And then Kane is able to kind of, he gets Carlson's attention, breaks through the barrier, gives Carlson the lance, and Carlson kills both the Space Girl and himself. Because he can't be trusted either, so he sacrifices himself to close the portal.
Like, and impales them both on it, right?
Yeah, and it's a really cool scene. Like, you see that it goes into her from the back, and then it comes out of his back, and, like, you can see kind of, like, there's this cool shot where they're both looking at each other's eyes, like, yep, we did that. but that's also, like, that even is, like, this is kind of sexual, right? Like, we're going to show this penetration of both. It's weird. Like, the portal closes, spaceship leaves, everything kind of returns, I guess, to normal as the comet leaves. Fortunately, along with the vampires, they've all been defeated, but wow. A lot going on.
If you have not seen this movie yet, I hope you followed all that, because I barely did.
It's tough. Like, as we said, like, multiple times, we've said it. Like, it is just, there's so much that they are delivering to you that it does make it hard kind of to parse all the information and connect the dots. I am confident that it does connect the dots.
Yeah, I think so. It feels, like you said, so detailed in how it's thought out. Like, it's got to be exactly at this position where you impale. Like, you know, it's just, like, so. They had their Bible or whatever that they worked on for this, and it wasn't just maybe this. You know, it was like they really thought out what they were doing.
But yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. Very cool, interesting. It's not a film that, I don't know, when you hear, you know, 80s sci-fi horror film, like, this was certainly not what I was expecting to come into, but very neat, very, you know, super detailed, as we said, cool visuals, cool powers, the way the vampires actually work. It's not, they're not biting you like a normal vampire. They're kind of just, like, sucking your energy out from you, and as they're doing it, like, you're just, like, becoming desiccated. I don't know, I found it very intriguing. It's one I probably will watch again, but I could totally see why this film bombed. I can't see, like, you hear, hey, space vampires sounds cool, and then you end up going to see this film, and it's like, wow, that's a lot going on. I'm just, like, here for the nude chick.
Yeah, not necessarily for general audiences.
Yeah. Interesting that they kind of, like, took the chance on this with Toby Hooper.
That's what I love about it. That was gonna be like one of my final thoughts, is like, I love that Cannon trusted Toby Hooper to be this like flagship director for them, and they gave him the budget. They let him go wild, like they let any other directors go wild, do whatever the fuck they want. So like, you're getting this movie that's just like a pure artistic vision of somebody, you know, guy that started with like a, I don't know what Texas Chainsaw Massacre was, $30,000, $60,000 movie, whatever. I have no idea. You know, one of the best movies of all time. But, like, they're just like, yeah, this guy is going to be our guy, and we're going to give him the budget, and we're going to let him do whatever he wants, and let him run wild. And then Hooper did. It's a very ambitious movie. It's just fucking bonkers. Like, so anyways.
Yeah, and, you know, it's crazy because, like, I mean, Poltergeist is a fantastic film. I don't think
it was very reined in from this,
right? And just to see, like, you know, Toby Hooper was picked by Steven Spielberg to direct that film. You know, there's debate over how much authority he actually had in it because Spielberg produced it as well. But
I hate that argument. I hate. Guess what? Who's got the director credit on the film? Toby Hooper, man. I'm sorry. Even if Spielberg did direct it, Toby Hooper directed it. Like, that's just how I feel about it. Like, I think it's such a cruel thing to say.
Has Spielberg ever, like, made comment that he was the one that did it? Like,
I'm pretty sure he says no.
Right. That's what I thought. Like, and I think, like, if Spielberg thought that he had done the work on it, he would have fought for the directing credit. Like,
yeah.
Spielberg at that point in time was powerful enough in the industry. He could have fired Toby Hooper from that film and done whatever the fuck he wanted with it. But he didn't.
Dude, Hooper could clearly do Spielberg type stuff. Look at the beginning of Invaders from Mars. Like, it's just like the suggestion that Hooper wasn't talented, or like, it's just like, dude, I don't know, man. Have you seen his fucking movies? You're crazy.
No,
like,
he clearly was talented. Like, but it's just crazy though to go from like working with Spielberg 3 years prior,
being with Cannon
on a film budget of, like, you know, Poltergeist was made for, you know, almost $11 million. It was a huge success. So I could see why Cannon would be like, here, do whatever the fuck you want. But
yeah,
unfortunately it did not pay out for them with the box office receipts there. But
yeah.
Yeah, really cool. I think, you know, across the board, aside from maybe that, you know, the spacewalk at the beginning, I think everything else looks really great. The story was fantastic. And I like that it challenges the viewer more than a typical, you know, vampire film would.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. Any final thoughts on Life Force, Jeff?
Yeah, I kind of touched on some of them. Just, I thought it was cool that Cannon hooked up with Hooper here and gave him, like, Golan and Globus. They fucking just started doing some coke, and they said, we'll sign those Cannon checks, we'll do whatever the fuck. And they let Cooper go crazy. It's this awesome hodgepodge of shit from the 70s and 80s. It's like Cannon's schlocky combination of Alien and, like, some zombie apocalypse movie. I just think that the movie gets weighed down, kind of crumples under the weight of all the ideas in it a little bit, and I could see how mileage might vary for people, even if you're a horror fan, this might not totally click for you, because it's a lot to digest on first viewing. I'll be interested, you know, it'll probably be a couple of years and I'll go back to it, but I'll be interested to see how, like, a second watch goes. For me, I'm not 100% sure. Like, it entirely works. I don't know if laying the, like, loose of the reins, like, totally worked here, but I'm happy it happened, and I'm happy I finally saw it. And now, after seeing these two movies, like, feel like I really know Hooper more than I did before, and even appreciate him more than before. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Looking at the production notes on Wikipedia, and it was shot in Britain, which makes sense. Yeah. Like that, but was evidently originally scheduled for 17 weeks. It went 5 weeks over, and Railsback, who is Steve Railsback, who is the main guy here, Carlson. He said the Canon people were great. All they told Toby was keep going.
they were fucking doing blow and saying, "We'll sign the check." Like it's clear, you could tell. Like they just let him go wild, and it's cool. You know, that's another thing you don't get to see very often.
John Dykstra also worked on this one, which you know, we talked about him and
Hooper had his little crew, man.
Yeah, like. And he put together a smart crew.
Yeah.
Like, very, very good with, you know, he knew what he needed for these films, and he got the best in the business to work with him. Even at the lower budget with Invaders from Mars. So, really, really smart here. I am happy with this film. It's been one that has been on my to watch list for a long, long time.
Dude, it was on my list of movies that we were going to do on this show. And I'm so happy you picked it before I did, because good Lord, the amount of notes I would have had to take if I was the one running this through this, like, holy shit.
it got to a point where it's like, I'm done. Cause like, I don't know where we're at in the film anymore. I had to rewind, watch a little bit more of it. Cause I lost track. It's funny. One thing that I did take out of this, not related to the film, is I've always heard SAS, in regards to, British military.
Yeah.
I did not know it was the Special Air Service until this film. They, specifically call that out.
So. Just say it. Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's neat. Like I've heard it in tons of other films, but they always just refer to it as SAS. Even in a, like, you know, they show up in Call of Duty every once in a while. You can play.
Yeah, that's right. I heard of them. Yeah,
and I never knew what the hell. I thought it was some like sort of, you know, army division, and I think it is, but it is specifically the Special Air Services. So, I'm happy with this one. So. Final ratings here. I'm going to go with a 7.
Okay.
What do you got?
6.5.
Nice. All right. Well, for us, since you gave a 6 to Invaders from Mars and I did as well, looks like for us internally that Life Force wins. But what was the call out to the listeners?
God, it was not even fucking close. We had 33 votes. 28 of them were for Life Force. 85% of the vote went to Life Force. And there was a possibility, when I started watching Invaders from Mars tonight, there was a possibility it could have gone either way, because I was really digging. I just love that, the pod people shit, like the taking over people's bodies. Like, I love that. But Invaders from Mars seals its fate at the end for me. And, you know, the fucking, the internet agrees with us that Life Force is the better, or at the very least, in my opinion, the more interesting film than Invaders from Mars. Invaders from Mars is a cool tribute.
Yes, definitely.
Life Force is just fucking insane.
Both, I think, are definitely worth watching.
Sure.
And I think if you are, like you, Jeff, I think I came out of this going, wow, I know a little bit more about Toby Hooper and
yeah.
What makes him tick and how he makes movies. Cause like I had seen, you know, Texas Chainsaw 2 and, you know, obviously the original Poltergeist and like a couple of the other ones, Mangler, like shit like that. But it's like, this is the one that these two are like, these are very different films. Like they're completely different. But it's interesting to see that he can do both sides of that. But both sides of horror, actually. And like, if you add in Texas Chainsaw, like he covers all the bases. Like he knows horror inside and out. He knows how to do the classic style. He knows how to do your monster movies. He knows how to do a slasher. Like, just
very
excellent horror director.
Yeah, to me, he is right up there with Carpenter. I put him and Carpenter above Craven, who was more consistently good later in his career, but it doesn't matter because the output from Hooper and Carpenter early on is just insane.
And I like Craven, but he has a very particular style, and I don't necessarily feel that he takes the, like, he knows what people want to watch.
He's a competent director. Like, Craven could have worked in any genre, probably.
Yeah.
These guys, like, lived and breathed this stuff, and
they
took, I don't know, risks. Man. Yeah.
I think, like, that's the other, like, I don't, not that Craven didn't, like, there.
Craven did early.
Yeah, early
on, and Craven's doing Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes, and they're very gritty and very disturbing, but, like, you know, by the time he reached Scream...
Yeah, he had found a style that works. Very slick. Knew what people wanted.
Yeah.
What do we have for next time?
Well, I'm glad that we both enjoyed Tobe Hooper Month, because next month, we're in the heart of summer, almost late summer. It's usually the time the carnival comes to town. That's one of my favorite parts of summer, is going to the carnival. I didn't get to do it last year. I will get to do it this year, hopefully. And we're going to do it again on this show with a carnival-themed episode. We're going to do Tobe Hooper's The Funhouse versus Hellfest from 2018. So,
I believe I've seen Hellfest.
I've seen both of these movies. This is more of a let's have fun with, let's have fun inside this little subgenre and see which one, you know, because it's probably assumed that Tobe Hooper wins here because it, you know, blah blah blah. But I really enjoyed Hellfest when I saw it. I think I enjoyed it more than you. The Funhouse is one of, like, it's probably top three Hooper for me.
I've actually not seen The Funhouse, so that one will be fun.
Oh, shit. Awesome, dude. So, if anyone likes to watch along, Hellfest is apparently available on Netflix right now.
Nice, nice.
Funhouse is going to be, and last I checked, a rental. Yeah, it's a rental across the board. So, you'd have to rent it.
That's fine.
And if anyone is interested in Canon Films, you like Canon Films, or you're more interested after hearing this episode and hearing about these movies or whatever, there's a cool documentary about them called Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films from 2014. That's not available free anywhere. You'd have to rent it as well, but if you're interested in film history, if you're interested in Canon, if you grew up in the 80s, it's worth a watch. It's a wild era of filmmaking. Yeah, we're going to go to the carnival next month, man. So excited.
I am excited. We're hit up August at the carnival.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Every town has, like, you know, probably has multiple carnivals, right? Like, they pop up in different neighborhoods and areas. We had one that was really close to my house that was called Stabfest. That was not the official title, but somebody would always get stabbed at this carnival.
Oh,
so the vernacular locally was that the Far Northeast Carnival was Stabfest.
ours usually, I mean, as far as I know, nothing happens. Ours actually does come in August. It comes at the last week of August, like the last weekend. It's called Corn Fest because I live in an area that's known for corn.
Yep.
And you usually get, like, these 80s cover bands too there. Not last year, because there wasn't one last year. The year before, we had Tiffany. Remember Tiffany from the 80s?
I do, yes.
She came. It was a free concert to see her. It was very cool. Usually it's like, you know, like the year before it was like a Tom Petty cover band, or there's this band in the area, I can't remember their fucking name now, but they're everywhere always, and they're just an 80s cover band. They're really good, but that's all they do. I love that carnival atmosphere. I love that little subgenre of films. You know, there's a few others probably, but we're new two of, I think, the bigger ones, and we'll see how, like, the newcomer does against Tobe Hooper's classic Funhouse.
All right. Well, we are on a Tobe Hooper yeah. streak here. But join us next month for the Funhouse and Hellfest.